2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
The noon hour is here.
Check it out.
And you're locked on to Utah's highest rated, most listened to sports radio station.
It's my station.
It's my station.
This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G, presented by U First Credit Union on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome in, 97.5, DKSL Sports Zone. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Well,
let's go.
I'm doing really well because we got the Cougar preview show today. We've got Will Snowden, former BYU Cougar running back, a legend. He also runs Alpha Recruits, has the highest recruited son here in the state in Smith Snowden. He's going to join us at about 2:10, 2:15.
What do we got to do to have him announce where he's going to go to college on our show?
Well, first things first, Smith Snowden, the highly recruited corner in the state, needs to make the decision.
No. We will wait as long as he needs to.
And I have no idea where that young man is deciding to go. I wish I did. But, Scotty, when Will comes in, let's have a real serious talk about him. Whatever they decide to do, if they're going to, you know, have some type of parade down Main Street, Karl Malone-esque, if they're going to fly in a helicopter, Kyle Whittingham-esque, if they're going to, whatever they're going to do, let's just make sure that we're there on the front lines.
Yes.
Breaking the news.
I just think we could, Nate, when Maddie will bring out the videos, we'll live stream it, we'll have all the hats. How many hats he wants, we'll go buy him.
Oh, we'll get Deanie Wimmer.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get Gephardt down here, making sure it's approved.
Yeah, K-Bank will do a weather report right behind him the whole time.
I'm telling you, man.
I'm forecasting a 80% chance of snow at, and then he picks up the hat.
Snow College.
100% chance of snow at, and he picks up. See, come on. This stuff writes itself. Let's go.
I get it, playing off the Snowden.
Yeah.
Well done, man. It was excellent. I'm just saying we can make a big deal out of it. I just don't know if he's made his decision. So we'll have Will Snowden on at about 2:10, 2:15. We're going to be talking with the Utah Tech analyst and Raider extraordinaire.
Jay Schrader.
Jay Schrader coming up at 2 o'clock. We've got the Oregon play-by-play voice at 12:30 today. You ask me how I'm doing? I just am a pig in mud, man.
Yeah.
This is my element. It's where I want to be.
Really fired up, by the way. After the show, I'm heading to the airport, catching a flight to San Diego. After a trip to Hawaii and a trip to Logan on Monday.
Trips to Logan.
For a basketball game. A trip to Logan last night for a coach's show. And now heading to San Diego. Which, you know, no complaining. This isn't digging ditches. So,
how's the wife of the voice doing?
I haven't seen her in a few days.
Has it been a while?
It's been a minute.
I hope she recognizes you.
But, you know, I think if it's the same hotel that we normally stay at, there's a nice little teppanyaki place. I'm not even kidding.
In San Diego.
Right next to
Boring.
The hotel.
Boring.
If you're by the convention center, walk on over to the Broken Yolk and get their chicoletes.
Chicoletes.
I think it's called chicoletes.
Not chicolets, chicoletes.
Yeah, I think it's chicoletes. Have you ever had that, Lloyd?
This is where
I have not.
It's
like, but it sounds delightful.
Tortillas, a green chili sauce, some chicken.
Kind of in this area right here.
They try to call it a breakfast dish, but I'm just telling you, man.
So it's in, so in it's you're, what you're saying is it's good food.
There's a Bed Bath and Beyond if we have time later.
Yeah,
it's good food.
Nice little Saturday. What'd you say, Lloyd?
So you're saying it's good food.
Oh,
well, there's a Dave and Buster's. Ooh, now we're talking.
It's such good food.
Okay, then Scotty's not going there.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a five-minute
Lloyd.
Uber
if it's
drive.
Close by, I'll go to it. If it's a $80 round trip Uber ride,
it's
I'm not
going to be an $80 round.
That's
trip.
That's what it was in Albuquerque when you
you're making
sent,
that
wanted
up.
To, you wanted to send me to Roswell for some dinner.
Okay, now you're being dramatic, but whatever.
I want to go to Roswell. I think it'd be cool to discover some of that
my
stuff.
My brother lives in Roswell.
What?
Yeah, my oldest brother.
No.
Yeah.
Does he believe in the...
No. No, he does not.
Oh.
But apparently it's great for tourism down there.
What do they call it? The third kind? Third kind, right?
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Is that... There you go.
It's the third kind. Does he believe in the third kind?
No, he does not. No. But apparently a lot of good tourism down there. In that area.
Man, I challenge myself on the third kind often. But
I firmly believe. I firmly believe we've been visited, yes.
So do you
many
feel
times.
Like our government truly is hiding stuff?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Although I'm a little...
Yeah, you're going to make a good point right here, Scotty. I know right where you're going.
I do. My thoughts on that have been somewhat tampered because... And I'm not making any judgment call. I know some people love him. I know some people
yep,
hate him.
Here you go.
But Donald Trump cannot keep his mouth shut. And so if Donald Trump had access to all of our nation's secrets, including the fact that aliens may have visited, there's no way Donald Trump keeps his mouth shut about aliens visiting the
United States. But wasn't there something released about it? Like, I thought that they released the dossier of our alien encounters. Because remember, they started releasing
videos.
No,
that is not what they found at Mar-a-Lago.
No, they started releasing videos of...
I don't remember this.
...these alien encounters. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was a big deal. Remember,
really?
The government's like, we're going to be on... We're unleashing...
So the government announced that we've had aliens?
Yes.
What? Yeah. I would think that would be a bigger story than this.
What are you talking about?
I'm not even kidding you.
The aliens...
Stone. Did the government or not? Did they say, hey, we're releasing
yes,
what we know about aliens?
We've been visited by aliens.
Huh?
It's more complicated than that.
But it's along those lines,
there's
is it
Stone.
Not?
Well, Stone knows.
I'm telling you. Yeah, because, I mean, we got Mr. Star Trek Stone over here. He knows it.
You're more of a Star Wars guy, right?
Neither.
Neither. Oh, neither.
Oh, I thought they were.
But he's a Marvel guy.
Kind I thought of. Star Wars is Marvel.
No. Star Wars is owned by Disney, which also
man,
owns Marvel.
You are going to have a Trekkie show up and just...
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know what they'll do.
When I saw
you,
James Kirk fighting with a lightsaber, yeah, that'll get them all riled up.
Luke, I just don't have the power.
I'm giving it all she got, Han. I don't know what else to do.
I'm a doctor, not a Jedi.
That one time when Captain Kirk snapped his fingers and everybody disappeared...
Oh, yeah, that was...
They did. They released a bunch of videos.
When Geordi's like, Wakanda forever.
Oh, man. Anywho.
All right, let's get to it. Starting lineup, Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This is Hans and Scotty G.
Let's go!
The lineup is set, and it's time to kick off the show with the biggest topic of the day. This is the Starting Lineup, presented by Peach Windows and Doors. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
So, Scotty, I'd like to say that you and I have a master's in sports. Would you say that?
I'd say that's fair enough. We've been around. We've seen some things.
So we got a master's in sports. Let's dissect the remainder of this Utah season, where they just checked in on the college football playoffs.
Okay.
And how high they could go if they run the table from here on out. So you got Oregon, who sits number 12 right now in the college football playoffs. You got Colorado, that's a complete dog. Then you got your Mountain West Conference, your Pac-12 championship game. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And just for the sake of conversation, let's say USC beats UCLA coming up this weekend. And it is a Utah-USC rematch. And I'm going to tell you, USC is number 5 in the country when they rematch in the Pac-12 championship.
All right.
Those are the guesses that I'm making. I do think USC is going to be right there on the edge, because I think if USC gets there with no more blemishes and beats Utah, I actually think they're going to be very strongly in the conversation for a college football playoff. Very strongly. In fact, I think they'll be there if USC runs the table. So USC, or let's put them at 5, because I think the committee is going to be like, well, let's wait to put them in until they beat the Pac-12 championship or win the Pac-12 championship. And let's say Utah knocks them off. What's the highest Utah could get?
6. Definitely not in the top 4. But I would say in that 6 range.
So 6 as high as they go.
I have a hard time saying that they could jump to 5.
Rose Bowl is the peak.
But I guess it depends. Like, let's say they blow out Oregon. Bo Nix plays, and Utah wins the game by 21 points. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think Utah wins, but
that's going to be a bugger of a game.
Yeah, but let's just say, for the sake of argument, the best-case scenario for Utah, they blow out Oregon. Obviously, they blow out Colorado. And then they take on USC in the championship game, and they blow out USC. Again, highly, highly unlikely. I'm just trying to think.
Beating them for a second time.
Second time in resounding fashion. They still don't get in. I think they cap out at 5.
I actually agree with you, and largely due to Oregon not taking care of their business.
Yes.
When they had an opportunity to do that. Utah not taking care of their business against Florida, and Utah not taking care of their business certainly against UCLA,
who
didn't take care of their business.
And the problem is, you still have a little Florida stink on you, too.
You'll always have the Florida stink on you. There's nothing you can do. You can't wash your clothes enough time to get that loss off of you.
Florida's that guy that you shared a Uber with that's a heavy smoker, and you get back to your hotel room, and you can't get that smoke smell off of you.
Nope. I do think that the committee is going to try to be cute and put them up to number 5.
Yeah.
I think they're going to say, look, they're the best out of the Pac-12. It's really nice, and we're going to put them at number 5. It was a really nice 7-game win streak that they went on to finish the season, because that's what it would be. It would be a 7-game win streak. That win streak would include USC twice. It would include Oregon. It would include Washington State, Arizona, Colorado, and Stanford. And so it'd be a really nice win streak, and they would give them kind of a tip of the cap, like, well, there's number 5 for you. Sadly.
Pat, pat, pat.
I would love to see them get an opportunity, because I do think that coaching plays a huge part once you get there. When you get to that 14 playoff, I actually think great coaching, consistent coaching, plays a huge part in how you compete in that playoff game and in that championship game. And I'd love to see Kyle Whittingham have that opportunity to take his team to a college football playoff, just to see how he prepares. And if he can come out and surprise some people, because they would certainly be the underdog in whoever they were matched up against. And if they did get there, that would probably be them as the number four taking on Georgia as the number one. So there's your consolation prize. If you did get there, it's like, all right, here's the best. Now you got to beat the best of the best to get to the championship. That's how it is. Eventually you're going to have to play Georgia and get them out of the way right out of the gates. Yeah. But I would love to see Kyle Whittingham have an opportunity to prepare for that game. We're just not going to see it.
Now, there is a decent consolation prize here. Let's say Utah runs the table, gets to the Pac-12 championship game. USC does the same, and you lose to USC. USC goes to the college football playoff. There's a good chance they sneak in. And guess what at that point? Well, somebody's got to go to the Rose Bowl. That would be Utah.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of really cool things available here for the University of Utah.
Great stuff available. Absolutely. They've got themselves in a great position. Now, they got to take care of Oregon.
Yeah.
You can't slip up. And after what we saw Oregon do last week, it makes me feel much better about Utah's chances of beating Oregon. And I also think that Utah has identified what their defense is. They found more of the identity. And it's not going to be a lot of conservative play against Bo Nix. Bo Nix can beat you with his feet.
Yeah.
But Utah's not going to sit there like they did against UCLA, like they did against USC.
And just hold
until
a pocket.
The fourth quarter. Yeah, no, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to be much more aggressive at the quarterback and say, all right, if he gets out of the pocket, we expect Cole Bishop. We expect Isbell. We expect, one of three or four other fantastic safeties, whether it's Hubert or what's the freshman, Vaki?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever it is, that safety that's back there, we expect you to come clean it up. Come make a play. In fact, do you remember watching Georgia and Oregon, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember watching Georgia's safeties in that
game? Oh, yeah.
Game?
You, that's the one thing you came away with that you kept talking about was the safety play of Georgia.
Georgia's safeties in that game allowed Georgia to do whatever they wanted to do. Defensively. Allowed them to do whatever they wanted to do. You want to rush? You want to blitz? What do you want to do? Go do it, because you had these safeties that were there to control the edges, control any escapability, and control the over-the-top ball because they had the speed to recover. And I think that Cole Bishop has some of those skills. I think Isbell has some of those skills. I think Hubert's got some of those skills. So just go be aggressive. And the other thing is, Scotty, what do you got to lose?
Nothing.
So you come in and be conservative?
No, you can't do that.
If Utah goes into that Oregon game and loses because their defense was trying to keep it in front of them, trying to play cute, and gave up 32 points, and their offense could only muster 28. If that's how that game goes, I'm going to be irate. Because that Utah defense deserves more freedom. And Morgan knows it. I think they found it. I think they found their
chemistry,
their style.
It's taken them a minute to find a little balance on that team, but I think they've got it somewhat dialed in at this point.
I think they do, too. And I don't think they've got a defense that can really stop or at least slow down Utah's offense enough. I don't think they've got that kind of defense. And you've got some guys that are starting to make a name for themselves. Samote Pepa is making a name for himself. Two sacks and three TFLs in a game.
Future's really bright for that young man.
That's pretty tough to do.
Yeah.
And he's put together a pretty good resume over the last three or four games. I know that they're still trying to find themselves without Van Fillinger, but I did a film breakdown of Gabe Reed off of a safety read where he made a play. He came back and he made a big play on the ball to stop a huge gain on a 3rd and 14. That would have certainly been a first down last week. And I know they didn't need any heroes against Stanford. I get it. But it was just nice to see Gabe Reed making some big plays. So they're finding their bearings. I think they beat Oregon, but I think you're right. This is going to be a fight for their life. I also think you're right. They need to make a mark. If there was a 0.05% chance of them making a college football playoff, that 0.05 would only be attainable by 17 to 20 point wins in the next three games that they play.
So play like that's the case.
Exactly.
So go.
Throw caution to the wind and be like,
shoot your shot.
Let's try to put 50 on the board. Let's blitz these guys. Let's sack the crap out of them.
Like, I remember there was a year Ohio State was kind of on the outside looking in. And I don't know if this was the BCS or if this was college football. I can't remember. I think it was, I don't know, it was a while ago. But I think Gary Anderson was actually the recipient of this. But they were on the outside looking in, and they played Wisconsin at Ohio State. Urban Meyer played Wisconsin for a Big Ten championship game and won that game like 55-0.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely wrecked Wisconsin. Knowing that they had to put up style points to get in. And then they got in. I think they actually ended up winning the whole thing that year. So, you know what? I'm not saying it's possible to go out and blow out Oregon and blow out USC. But if you can find a way to make it happen, you probably ought to take a shot there.
Yeah, put a plan together that could have a big impact. And that's going to include a lot of blitzing and a lot of not playing it safe defensively.
If nothing else, it just allows you to be in the conversation. They have to chat about you. They have to talk about you. And if you're being talked about, that's great for recruiting. That's great. You want to be relevant. And that makes you relevant really quickly.
You know, I think the chances would have been improved slightly from 0.05% chance to maybe 0.5% chance if Oregon would have taken care of business.
Yes. Yep.
But they decided not to. Yeah. And if UCLA would have, because now USC would have had an opportunity to knock off a UCLA team that beat a very good Washington team, and it would bolster what USC is bringing to that Pac-12 championship game. But gosh dang it, the Pac-12 loves the Pac-12. They just can't stop.
Yeah, they can't help themselves. Hey, our good friend Clint tweets in. He said, all the government said was that there are flying objects that we can't identify. They never confirmed the presence of aliens.
Yeah.
So I guess by definition,
those are UFOs.
Unidentified flying objects.
And they released the images of them.
And they said, apparently, yes, there are things there that we don't know what they are, but it still could be like, you know, I don't know.
K-Banks weather cloud balloon.
Exactly. Something weird happened. But we don't know that it's a, you know.
I watch the videos. They are bizarre. But I also have seen people make a lot of different stuff with Photoshop.
I mean, it could be a Russian spy satellite.
And it could be one of our Air Force pilots getting really bored and being like, hey, stick your gum on the windshield and move your camera around.
Hands and Scotty, we're live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4528 South State Street. Rich is going to join us a little bit later on, but man, there's so many great vehicles up for grabs here. Vehicles that you will love to drive. I drive a Murano, absolutely love it. My wife drives a Pathfinder, she absolutely loves it. Why? Because they're great vehicles. We have a forever warranty, which means as long as we own it, regardless of miles, it'll always be covered. And we're able to get in at a good payment. So you can have a great interest rate. They'll give you more for your trade-in than anybody else. If you've got some credit issues, they'll work with you on that as well. It's all available for you at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4528 South State Street. We got some jazz gear. We got some candy. We got a chance for you to win BYU tickets as well. It's all straight ahead right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's game week for the Aggies, and the Zone is getting you ready for kickoff. After a win in Hawaii, the Aggies are just one win away from bowl eligibility as they square off against San Jose State this Saturday in Logan. Listen all week long for your chance to win tickets. Then hear all the play-by-play action this Saturday, beginning with the Aggie pregame show at 6:30. From Monday morning to the post-game press conference, your home for the best coverage of Aggie football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone.
Turn it up!
The Aggies look to become bowl eligible as they square off against San Jose State this Saturday in Logan. Your home for the play-by-play action of Aggie football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You're listening to Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Big one for Utah as they head to Eugene to take on the Oregon Ducks. Jerry Allen, he is the play-by-play voice of the Ducks, kind enough to join us. Jerry, how are you?
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys, doing pretty well. How you doing? We got sunshine and blue skies here through fog. Probably not as nice as it is there, but still, we'll take it.
It is sunny, but it is cold, and it's about 22 degrees, so I'm going to take the Eugene weather over this for sure.
Okay, I would share that with you. Cold's not good.
Hey, obviously this is so big. I know Oregon stubbed their toe a little bit, but this is a big one. Do you get that sense around the community of the enormity of this game coming up on Saturday?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you know, one of the goals that Oregon had was to get to the college football playoff. I think that's what, you know, probably four or five of the top teams in the Pac-12 were all pointing to, and Utah is certainly one of those. But, you know, to lose that game to Washington kind of takes that away. But the Pac-12 championship, you know, to get to play in that game and maybe get a chance to go to the Rose Bowl, that's still on the table. And these guys realize it. I mean, the fans, I'm sure, are disappointed. They don't get over things as quickly as the kids do. But, no, this is a big game. This is the rest of the season. I mean, you start losing back-to-back games, and things get tough really quickly.
Let's talk about that Washington game a little bit more. 34-37 loss, and I think all of us watched that thing and just scratching our heads at times trying to figure out what was up and what was down. There were so many crazy things in that game. But overall, that emotional loss, how hard is that sitting on Dan Lanning? How hard is that sitting on Bo Nix? How hard is that sitting on the team?
Well, you know, surprisingly, it's sitting on it, but not as much as one would think. Remember, these guys came off of an embarrassing season-opening thumping by Georgia, Dan Lanning's team, where he won a national championship last year. And they bounced back and had a great season from that game on. So they know how to get over the hump when bad things happen. That was a bad, bad loss. And they responded pretty well, and I think that's due to Dan Lanning and his staff. So even though it was a tough loss and you hate losing those rivalry games, they feel like they still got so much ahead of them that they're not ready to hang their head yet.
What's your early impression of Dan Lanning as head coach there?
I'm a little proudly over the top on him from the first time I met him. He just seemed really engaged and genuine. He wanted to know who I was, what I did, where I come from, why I'm there. He treats everybody like that. He treats the media with respect. He treats the fans, and so he's you know, he's tied to his job as a head coach and having to win and coach his players, but he gets the rest of it. And he's obviously a brilliant defensive mind, and I think he hired the right coordinators to get the job done too. So I'm right now, he's got to prove it. I mean, they got to win games, they got to get some championships, but down the road, I think this guy's got a chance to be a Hall of Fame coach.
Kind of a bit of a self-serving question, but you had a bird-eye view on that illegal touching call at the end of that game against Washington. What was your take on that?
You know, we didn't get a very good view of it. It was right in front of the Oregon bench. I think that's when you're talking about Troy Franklin going out of bounds, I guess. and then coming back in. We never got a good look at it, so all we could do, honestly, is say, gosh, that's a tough call at a moment like that in the game, because if he did step out, it was the heel of his shoe, and did it go down, or was it just the toe? But, you know, you look back at too many other opportunities in the game that you had, and you didn't execute, or your defense didn't do a good enough job to stop Michael Penix Jr. So that was a frustrating moment of the game, because I think Oregon has a chance to probably kick a field goal, tie it up, and at home, great chance to win in overtime. But that's the call that got made, and we just kind of live with it.
Are there a lot of talks about last year with the two losses to Utah down the stretch in that season, or is it just, hey, that was a different coaching staff, that was a different team, this is an entirely different year?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think that there's some guys on this team that remember it, and you know, to remember those games and how poorly you played and how well Utah played, you know, you remember those things, and you want another chance. So some of those guys are like, yeah, that stung, that hurt. But there are a lot of new guys, and it's a whole new coaching staff, a different whole scenario. So it's kind of a mixture of both. Guys that remember that, don't like it, want to make up for it, and guys that are just looking forward for an opportunity to get over the Washington loss.
I've been really pleased watching Bo Nix, and I got to watch that BYU game up close and absolutely loved that game. Thought it was a fantastic game for Oregon, and Bo Nix played so well. Deadly both through the air and on the ground. Just in your opinion, Bo Nix's performance this year, how high ranking is it? How impressed have you been of him?
Well, there have been a lot of quarterbacks at Oregon that have played better. Obviously, Justin Herbert is one of those. Marcus Mariota, one of those. But I put Bo Nix, you know, right up there with him, depending on how the season finishes and what he can do, because he's been pretty spectacular, managing his team, reading defenses, making the right call, getting the ball to the right people. His legs, you know, spectacular. I think he's got, 15 touchdown rushes now, something like that. He's the complete package. He really is matured into that senior, that, you know, that final year guy, although he could come back for another year. But, he's everything. So I'd put him in the top three or four of quarterbacks that have played at Oregon since I've been there, certainly. And, you know, if he can get Oregon to a Pac-12 championship and win a big game, maybe like in a Rose Bowl, and add some more numbers to that, I'd say he's got a chance to be a first-round pick next year.
When you've watched teams prepare against him and defenses scheme against him, what have you seen that's been more successful, and what have you seen that Bo Nix has taken advantage of?
Well, I think the key, you know, for Bo Nix, is offensive line. Bo does a lot. He throws the ball well. He reads defenses. He can escape and extend plays. But the key to what Bo Nix is able to do is because the run game works. Lucky Irving is able to, you know, make that defense play honest. And the offense just doesn't let many people get to Bo. I think they work together so well. So I think the key for Bo has been the offensive line, protecting him and giving him time to operate and do what he does. And he's pretty calm back there. I think, you know, that's probably the thing that has impressed me the most, because he doesn't seem to get rattled. Those feet aren't jumping up and down, bouncing around. He'll survey the field, go through his progressions, and find a guy that's open. So I think that's why no one guy is, you know, heads above everybody else. I mean, certainly Troy Franklin was kind of a go-to guy, but he spreads the ball around pretty well. If he does anything that irritates me, or I wouldn't even say irritates me, it just scares me, is when he takes off and runs. Anytime your key guy does that, something bad could happen. But so far this year, with the exception of last Saturday night when he got dinged up, when he's run, he's made good things happen.
So I've not checked multiple sites on this. The site I'm on that I usually use for stats in preparation for a game has a number that I have a hard time believing. So you need to tell me if this is a typo or not. Has Oregon only given up 2 sacks this year?
No, that is correct. The second sack was against Washington, and that's that offensive line I'm talking about, and the mobility of Bo Nix. Yeah, they just, you know, teams just don't get to him.
So again, last year, 24 sacks given up by Oregon. This year, only two. So you, if you were to give it a percentage, a certain percentage out of 100 goes to the offensive line, another percentage goes to Bo Nix. How would you split that up?
Boy, it'd be tough to split it up other than 50-50 because Bo Nix is probably not the quarterback with the numbers that he has if he doesn't have that offensive line in front of him. And the offensive line could be doing a great job, but if you don't have a quality guy behind you, then that offensive line's not going to get recognized. Maybe a couple of percentage points more to the O-line because the running backs are taking advantage of that O-line as well. But they complement each other. They really do. It's kind of amazing to think that through this whole season that Bo Nix has only been sacked two times.
What's going to be fun to watch this Utah offense going up against this Oregon defense? I know that there's been some points given up throughout the year, a couple of 40 points, a couple 30 points. And I know that Utah's got quite the capability at putting the ball in the end zone. Your thoughts on this Oregon defense against Cam Rising, Tavian Thomas, who emerged again last week, and this Utah offense?
Boy, it's probably going to be one of the biggest jobs Oregon's had in a while. I think UCLA was that type of a team with a great running back and a great quarterback, and that's Utah. I mean, so most coaches will tell you we got to try to make a team one dimensional, take something away from them. I don't know what you take away. Do you take away the running back? Do you take away the quarterback? I mean, Utah is so complimentary about what they do. It's difficult to load up on one and take the other way. Or I will say this, and I don't think it's any secret, Oregon, has had some issues in the back end of that defense, giving up a lot of yards. And so that's something they're going to be working on really, really very hard this week, and hope that that doesn't give up the run. It's going to be interesting because I think Utah presents some problems that most teams have not presented this year, and that is that dual-pronged attack.
I know that you're in a kind of a precarious situation, can't really comment on this specifically, but with the whole, UCLA and USC going to the Big Ten, and a lot of question marks surrounding the future of Oregon and Washington and where they may be going and the Pac-12 and now I guess the Pac-10 overall, how has that affected the Oregon fan base? And I mean, are there conflicting feelings about what the future holds with that conference and potentially a future conference? What's the vibe up there in regards to expansion and where things are shaking out right now?
Well, I think fans are probably going through what most of us in the media are going through out here, particularly, and that is when the initial announcement came down, the sky was falling. I mean, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. You know, what's going to happen? Where are we going to go? Oh, us, oh, me. And then as the season started progressing along and no other decisions came out, and then the games took central focus, and then the fight for maybe getting up in the polls to get to a Final Four. I mean, there are things that didn't make you totally forget about it, but there's just nothing coming out. And I think fans have kind of realized that we're not going to hear something until we hear something, much like what happened when USC and UCLA announced. It's going to come out of the clear air. So that whole worry about where are we going to be, what are we going to do, is sort of died down for right now. I mean, it's still in the back of the mind. Don't get me wrong. I mean, because it could be great or it could be terrible, but it's not front of mind right now.
Fans still plenty engaged. Autzen Stadium still going to be crazy for these Utes as they come in Saturday night.
Oh yeah, I mean, and because Utah, is a great program. Utah's put some spankings on Oregon at Autzen Stadium. I mean, there have been some games when Oregon fans remember more than the guys playing the game this year that Utah came in and embarrassed Oregon. So those are the kind of things that start rivalries and create rivalries, plus the fact that you got a team that's been so good for so long. I think that's Utah. A lot of respect for Utah. Hate going to Utah and playing. I mean, Oregon fans, I think Oregon team players would much rather play this game than some of the most teams would, but going to Utah is not easy because their fans are like crazy good. So to get him at Autzen is big, and I think the respect that Oregon has for Utah is not hatred like they have for Washington, but it's, gosh, find a different word. It's not hate. It's just like, don't like Utah. They're too damn good.
a respectful disdain, maybe.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Well, hey, we certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on with us. Look forward to catching up again here soon, and enjoy the game on Saturday. Should be a fun one.
Scott, good to have let me on. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that. In fact, if you want to go for another 2 hours, I'm happy to talk.
We got another 2 hours of the show, so there you go. Hey, thanks. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Good stuff, man. Utah, Oregon coming up on Saturday. I like that. I like a guy that's pretty honest saying, you know what? Like, we really don't like playing you guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fun. You know, because everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's such a great, fun game between the Utes and the Ducks. And this guy's like, no, dude, you know, you guys put it on us last year for two games. And it's always super physical. And our coaches and our players don't like it. So, yeah, we're not overly thrilled about playing this game.
Scotty, this is a crazy matchup because Oregon's defense gives up 400 yards a game.
Yep.
They gave up 41 points to Washington State. They just gave up 37 to Washington. They've given up 30-plus, I think, three or four times this year. Four times, maybe. They allow teams to put the 400 on them. And Tavian Thomas found his stride. Cam Rising's feeling good. Dalton Kincaid's back in the lineup, which is awesome. Logan Kendall has been unleashed.
The rhino. That rhino wants to run.
Logan Kendall. Now Oregon has to prepare for him as a receiving threat.
Yes.
So I'm sure that's keeping them up at night. You saw a couple of those fourth down conversions that Vele pulled down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Oregon is losing a little bit of sleep on what they're going to be able to keep Utah to. I'm putting Utah 38 points in this game. Let me set it at 35.5 for you. Utah at 35.5 for you. And we'll do this in the preview show tomorrow, but just kind of a early over under to throw at you.
And we'll do it again in the morning before.
Yeah.
Well, things might change. You never know.
Yeah, and then we'll give you the results in the morning after.
That's so right. What I have three different opportunities to give you three different answers.
Yes, you do.
So that one of them will be correct.
Yes, you do.
Okay. I'll go the over 35 then.
I think it's the over.
Okay. If I gave you 31 for the Oregon offense against the Utah defense. Hands, two sacks. They've given up two sacks. Mm-hmm. The next best is Georgia Southern, who's given up five. Ohio State's given up seven. Actually, there's three teams that have only given up seven. A couple teams, eight. Utah, by the way, is one of those teams. It's only given up eight sacks this year.
Yeah. Were those two sacks against Georgia?
No. He said one was against Washington last week. Okay. I don't know which the other one was. But Oregon has given up two sacks for 5 yards. They only have minus 5 yards in sack yardage lost this year.
I'd take the over 31, and I'd put it at 32.
I mean, even Air Force, who doesn't throw the football, have given up nine sacks this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
it's an obscene number.
It is. It's a beautiful number. I'm sure something they're extremely proud of.
Okay, Utah, 0.5 sacks. Over, under.
Over. Because I think they're going to...
1.5 sacks.
I think one of my favorite things in playing the game of chess in the world of sports is hitting somewhere where they think they're very solid.
Yeah.
It's my favorite in the world of boxing. When you got a boxer that is incredible in a certain area, or a UFC fighter, a mixed martial artist that's incredible in a certain area, and watching their opponent where that guy's thinking, there's no way he's coming after this because I'm really good at this. and the opponent goes right at it. I'd love Utah to take that as a challenge. We'll say, we'll see your two sacks. Let's go see what we can do. Let's unleash. Let's see how good Bo Nix plays when he's on the ground.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Utah gets two sacks.
Sacks. They double it. I like it. Hans and Scotty live here at Tim Daly Nissan in Murray, 4528 South State Street. Giving away BYU tickets. Come by and scan the QR code for your chance to win. It's all right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keering.
Joined by Jaren Hall, quarterback at BYU.
You know, coming off a couple, not perfect seasons. You could tell that there were still some faith issues surrounding, you know, ourselves and the fans, trying to figure out what type of team we are, what type of energy you want to bring. And then slowly over the years, as we kind of improved and started figuring out who we were, you know, the fans started believing too, you know, and then slowly year after year, the stadium began to be a little more electric until last year, you know, when they started selling out again and into this year. So it's just been really fun to see progress, not only our team, but you know, the faith the fans have had, the love and support that they've given, taking the time out of their days to focus on us and give us love.
It's Unrivaled afternoons from 3 to 6, presented by G2G Bars, perfect for anyone who needs a quick, tasty and nutritious boost. The 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Looking for the latest on the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies?
Yeah!
We've got you covered. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G, presented by U First Credit Union on 97.5, the Sports Zone.
What you may have missed right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. All right, you know, there's been this running battle between who has it worse right now between me and Lloyd with our NFL teams. Lloyd got hit with another bullet today, though. This one's not good.
Did I press tweet on that?
Because yesterday...
Oh, I did.
The owner, Mark Davis, announced that he has nothing but admiration and respect for the job that Josh McDaniels is doing in Las Vegas. He's a big fan, and that he will be with the team for years to come because he feels like he's the right guy. So when a guy makes that announcement, as big and as bold as it is, there's usually something behind it. A little bit more than just what he's saying. Well, a report today coming out from
when things are this bad,
Dov Kleiman, an NFL reporter, saying the reason the Raiders won't fire Josh McDaniels is financial. Quote, they don't have the money to fire him. The team is cash poor and can't afford to fire McDaniels and then pay another coach. According to Bill Plachke of the, I think he's the LA Times, right?
Yeah.
Bill is. Yep, LA Times. And says he'll be the coach this year and next year.
Because they can't afford.
They can't afford to fire him. I thought that's the reason you went to Las Vegas, was to make some money.
They fired Chucky with cause, right?
Well, I think they also had to.
Did they have to pay him out?
I think that might still be going on, because I think Chucky's owed a good deal of money in that whole thing.
Is he?
But I thought that Mark Davis actually kind of like agreed to pay him because he wasn't happy about the decision on how everything went down.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe so.
But that's...
So anyway...
You kind of need that money.
Here's the thing. At least the Broncos are owned by the Walmarts, which have, you know, the Waltons who own Walmart, who have like an endless supply of cash. But unfortunately, they are going to give $250 million to Russell Wilson, so... You know, 5 cents of every purchase you make at Walmart is going to Russell Wilson right now.
I was wondering, man. Stopped in to get some 12-gauge shells because we're doing a clay pigeon shoot.
Oh, nice.
Over the Thanksgiving weekend.
Pull!
And I noticed those were up 5 cents. So glad that could go to Russell Wilson.
He'll. Mr. Unlimited has an unlimited bank account, thanks to the Waltons. And the Broncos.
Well, can't Davis start a car dealership or something?
You know what? We're actually, I think, pretty close to the Raiders.
Raiders Collective.
We're pretty close to the Raiders being in the mob's pocket.
What do you mean by that?
Because they're going to need some money, and they're
going to
be
going
owned.
To the mob for
they're
going to
be owned by the mob. Like, we're close to that. That's how much money he doesn't have.
There's going to be Lake Mead threats?
Possibly. Oh, Mark Davis might be, he might end up in Lake Mead somewhere.
Maybe Mark's just going to sell the team and be done with it.
Oh, man, that's crazy. What a wild
story.
Let's
start by selling your Astro van, Mr. Davis.
So, Scotty, you do understand that our Raiders are in much more dire straits than your Broncos.
I think we all have really significant issues plaguing our team. The good thing about the Broncos is they can get rid of Nathaniel Hackett and be fine. They can kick him to the curb and just be fine financially. The problem is there's this little thing called the salary cap, which means you can't kick Russell Wilson to the curb and be done with him because he'll just count against your cap and you're screwed, regardless of how much money you have.
Do you think if they hired Jeff Saturday, Jeff could inspire him like he inspired Matt Ryan?
I would take Jeff Saturday over Nathaniel Hackett right now.
Oh, there's no question.
I would take
Ryan Deem.
Yes.
Off that same offensive line.
I would take Hans Olsen off that Colts team over Nathaniel Hackett. And I'm not even kidding.
Oh, man.
I'd let Hans Olsen rip all the nose rings out of all the players' noses that he wants.
It was a
tongue
ring.
The gauges. Take out the tongue rings. You name it.
It was a tongue ring. And we did make it very clear to all our football players, no jewelry on the field.
Now, to your point, you made him remove it and hand it to you before you threw it into the potato field, right?
Yes. I did not rip anything out.
Or was it an onion field?
And I accidentally misplaced it. It was alfalfa.
Yeah, you're not finding that in the alfalfa
yeah,
field.
No, it's gone.
Onion field, maybe.
But how great is that? How incredible is that our CUNA practice field was surrounded by alfalfa?
That's awesome.
Parked in this big dirt parking lot. Go practice amongst the alfalfa. And that's fun when you've got serious hay fever.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Oh, it's a good time. It's a great time.
That alfalfa will wreck you in a hurry.
Yeah, that late summer alfalfa, it's so Ooh. Fun.
Especially after that third crop and it's all cut and fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thrasher drives through that and it's kicking up all the dust.
Are you a big...
You can see why I got out of coaching. It was a terrible experience.
It was the allergies.
That, the kids, the parents, and the other assistant coaches and administration.
But other than that, it was great.
Yeah, the game. I love the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely love the game. But the kids' parents, the administration, the other assistants, and my hay fever all made it miserable.
Hey, what was wrong with the assistants?
Nothing. Except for they didn't know anything.
I'm picturing the guy, Bobby Boucher's coach.
Oh, because it. Well, no, I'm not going to attack.
They're over there reading Football for Dummies on the sideline.
I refuse to attack anybody.
Good.
But it's just crazy. You know, you get into these hierarchies and they're like, well, so-and-so's been calling the plays for the last 6 years. Okay, and you've won four games over the last 6 years. So how's so-and-so doing? Well, yes, but we need to be fair to him.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, that's how you want to go with it. That's fine.
So the Colts are being really fair with me right now.
Yeah.
So, come on. Like, it's a big boy job right now. You're not getting it done. You got to get kicked to the curb.
That's where you tell those guys, you see this card? That's an NFL player's card. Do you have one of these?
I only show that to you and police officers when they pull me over. That's how important this card is.
I wish Jeff Saturday was doing this back then. Because then I could be like, do you not see what happens? Do you not understand? I will tell you, Jeff is trying to make a statement.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. I'm being honest.
Well, when he's
trying to make a statement.
And plus, when he's got his, like, even some of his coworkers that are like, how dare they make this hire against guys that are, you know, in the, been struggling and trying to get the job. Well, guess what? Jeff just went out and won a game.
So, Jeff is a huge believer in the player. The guy that has done it and accomplished it at the highest level. And I'm not saying that he probably believes that every one of those guys is meant to be a head coach in the NFL, but I do think he's trying to make the point of if somebody has had those accomplishments for a 14 or 15 year period and they come off of a football field, what does it matter if I coached at the college level or the pro level? I saw it here at a high level under Tony Dungy, and he came in with Jim Mora, and I can't remember who he left with. Did he leave with I can't remember who the head coach was when he
Jim left. Caldwell, I think.
I think it was Caldwell.
Yeah.
Because he ended up in Green Bay, and he talked about being benched in Green Bay.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the Green Bay.
Yeah, so he ended up in Green Bay, and they benched him at Green Bay. And I know that that was a really tough time for him before he jumped over as an analyst, but I hearing in his voice, and I think he made that statement, kind of like, yeah, we'll let all these coaches know that you come out of this as a player for 15 years and you make it to a couple of Super Bowls, you may be qualified. You may be qualified to go coach. Now, I'm not saying everybody's qualified, but if you're a leader, if you are a committed leader and you hire the coaches around you, then yeah, I think you could be successful.
I mean, there's some guys where it just crashes and burns, like, you know, Magic Johnson with the Lakers, or there's some guys who just think that naturally they'll become a great coach and it just doesn't happen.
They're not willing to work.
Exactly. I mean, there are some guys, in fact, you look at the NBA coaches that made it as, or NBA players that made it as coaches, like Scott Skiles, or, you know, to a much higher level, Jerry Sloan, guys that weren't the most talented players, so they had to work their butt off and learn every aspect of the game to give themselves any kind of edge as a player, and then that translates as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, Magic Johnson goes out there and goes, well, hey, just throw that no-look pass. Well, he's like, I can't do that.
I don't know what you're talking
about. I don't know. Well, it's easy. I do it all the time. Just, you know,
when your back is turned.
Yeah, and they're like, well, I can't do that. Oh, come on. Everybody can do that. I can do that. And they're like, well, yeah, because you're special.
I will, just to the credit of Jerry and to these other great the great players that made it to be great coaches, they really did work up a hierarchy, did they not?
Yeah.
It's not like the Utah Jazz handed it to Jerry.
No.
They're like, all right, go. This is such an incredible experiment just to see, okay, can a guy that is an emotionally charged leader, and I can say it personally because I know he's an emotionally charged leader, he has a different kind of confidence of anybody I've ever been around. He's just that guy. Can that make the difference in the locker room? I think it did with Matt Ryan. I think when he went to Matt Ryan, he's like, hey, Matt, just first things first. First thing we're doing when I get here. First thing. You're my starting quarterback. Really? What are you going to do? Was it Heineke? What are you going to do with him?
Somebody drinking a lot of Heinekens. Yeah. I don't know.
What are you going to do with him? We're going to bench him. Yeah, but he was promised that he – I don't care what he was promised. You're going to be my guy, and we're going to lead you back to where you need to be. And I can just hear the conversation of him inspiring him and at least getting the guts back, you know?
Yeah.
How far it will take him? I don't know. But like I predicted, I said Jeff Saturday is going to have a better record than I didn't throw the Broncos in. You put that in after I sent the tweet, and now we've got the two coaches on it. But I said it right out of the gates. He will finish with a better record than Josh McDaniels, who's been there for a long time coaching.
Yep.
Assistant and a head coach. Not a head for a long time, but an assistant winning Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
How many rings does he have?
A lot. Five or six.
More than Jeff.
Yes. Yes, he does.
So it's a great experiment just to see what does motivation do for these guys anymore? Because people always throw the conversation of, really, what does it take to motivate a guy? He's being paid $18 million to play a football game. What more motivation do you want? Well, eventually, money runs out as a motivation. Eventually, you get enough money in your bank account, and you wake up sore enough, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, man, how much do I really want to put into this? Like, I heard Jake and Ben talking about Ben Simmons. What is even pushing Ben Simmons anymore? He's got the money.
Yeah.
He knows everybody hates him. He doesn't have a team that likes him. So why even get up and try to put the work in that's necessary to be an elite pro? So if you got a guy like Jeff Saturday that maybe sparks some things in Taylor. Is Taylor their running back?
Jonathan Taylor.
He's a beast.
He is a beast.
But maybe if you turn the gears in somebody, can you ratchet it up a little bit? Because it does not feel like the NFL is getting stagnant, even with some of their high-level players. It feels to me like even some of the high, and it feels the same in the NBA.
Well,
what you tweeted out about Kevin Durant, I'm done with that whole group. Kyrie, Kevin, all of them. I'm done with all of them.
Yeah. Throw LeBron in the mix there too.
LeBron, Anthony Davis, all of them.
Yeah. You bring up a really good point. You get to a certain level of your career, like, why am I even doing this anymore? Why, you know, I like the money. I like the limelight. I like the excitement. But in a regular season, why am I even trying?
Well, and it's hard for coaches at the professional levels nowadays because they're sitting in the office wondering, do these guys even respect me? They make 10 times more than I do. And a coach has got to be thin. And I can promise you, Jeff isn't sitting there thinking that. He doesn't give two craps how much somebody makes. Now, that can work against him if he rubs somebody the wrong way and he loses the locker room and they're like, man, he's so full of pomp. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. I can't listen to another word from him.
Yeah. Well, all I know is if I were – well, you can't do it if you're Jeff Saturday, but if I'm Jeff, I have somebody else show that video of Peyton Manning trying to get into his face on the sideline and Jeff Saturday shouting him down saying, get out of my face, and run the bleeping ball.
And Peyton, that's a great
– and Peyton eventually be like, great. Yeah, we will run the ball, Jeff.
That's a great
and then
video.
Walks away.
It's such a great video. Oh, man. It's such a...
Because Jeff wasn't taking any of it.
I just... Some of my fondest memories is thinking back on those guys. All of them.
Yeah.
It's funny because I've been reuniting with a lot of those guys. And eventually, I'm going to head back out there. The guy that recruited me out there that was my scout that actually found me and brought me out there, he's still out there. And eventually, I'm going to head back out there, go see those guys. I hope Jeff, I hope he does well, Scotty.
Yeah.
I really do.
Hands and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Coming up next, we'll transition into your Cougar Preview Show next, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.